This is the Asambo, writer of episode 717, Roy Kane. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spire Media.
This week, we're not talking at all. We're just here for the view. Welcome back to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Agent Aaron Peterson. Yeah, Troy, I know I'm pretty. But you're not my type. Thanks for joining us yet again for number 150 in The Blacklist, Roy Kane, written by E.S. Samba and directed by Daniel Willis. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found where? At theblacklistexposed.com.
I think he says it faster every time we get closer to the end of the season.
That's how I'm going to do it next week.
Well, maybe we won't be here next week. There'll be cartoon versions of ourselves. We should talk about that first.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I got a cool... somebody emailed me personally. Did I tell you this?
No.
About last week's episode?
No.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I forgot to write the name down. I'm sorry. And I'm not going to look it up because it was a weird email. But they just said, Aaron, how could you say you like that episode when there was no Red Reddington? Does that mean you don't like Red Reddington? Like I'm attacking Spader. I'm like, it was one episode, man. I just enjoyed it. I think that's all I said. I just said, it was one episode, man. I enjoyed it. What do you want me to tell you? It was fine. I think it's great when you have a character or you have a cast of characters that are engaging enough that you can have one just take the ride for the whole episode and you can enjoy it.
Speaking of cast of characters, we should talk about the news that Agent Park went series regular for season 8.
Yes. Laura Sun.
Right? Yes. Correct. Yep.
Congratulations. Welcome aboard to the task force. You'll be seeing her more. And can't wait to see what the Phantom does because half of them are always great about it and half of them
want to basically roast you in a spigot.
Yeah. I would take that as a compliment. That's what I would do if I was Laura.
If I look at it this way, if the fandom wasn't split in half on everything about the Blacklist, I mean, like everything, whether Diego's hair should move or not, whether Liz should wake up in the morning or not, like there's all kinds of topics, but it is 50-50.
No, that's not split. That is 98% people want Diego's hair to move.
That's right.
They do.
But yeah, it's interesting. It's 50-50. So I think that's what keeps the show going too, because we're 50-50 on a lot of things and it makes the podcast interesting. If we were I totally agree with you. It'd be the shortest podcast ever.
I'm convinced Park is the real Liz. Start that one. Get it going. Fire it up. Fire it up.
What if Park is Diego's mom? What? No.
Wait. That's just... doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
You guys think that we're being funny right now, but for our other show, Beyond Westworld, that just finished its season 3 finale, which was amazing.
Yeah.
There's theories like that all the time that are just literally off the rockers, and people truly believe it.
Yeah, they're actually crazier than Blacklist theories sometimes.
Sometimes.
We want to get into this one? Let's knock it out.
Yeah, why not? First and foremost, if you're new to the podcast, we do a little profiling question from last week. We get your answers and results to the poll from. Then we break down the case profile for this week's episode, Roy Kane. Get some wise words from Red during Red's rhetoric. And then hear from all of you in special agent intel. Our profiling question from last week then. Will Liz and Wrestler get together? I have to say when I wrote this, Aaron, I did type Will Liz and Red because the D and the S are so close together on the keyboard. I was like, oh my gosh, Lizington will cheer for joy that we asked the question.
Oh boy, don't do that. Don't get that going.
So no, Liz and Wrestler, will they get together? What did they say?
The results are 60-40 in favor of, as my son would say, they're going to take it to Pound Town.
Oh my gosh. This is a family show, Aaron. Come on.
He's family and he says it. I'm just letting you know all the time.
Mason wrote in and said, I'm rooting for Keenler. They just make sense. Also, Red would approve. He was never a fan of Tom, but is fond of Wrestler, and the Red Wrestler banter that would arise if Keenler happened would be hilarious.
Sharon, if Liz and Wrestler become an item, I don't think it will happen till the end of the series. I think if it happened now, it would become a distraction, like Tom. I agree.
I purposely made Aaron read that one because it said Tom in it.
Oh, God. Don't even make me think about that. I like Wrestler.
And Kim said, please, no. I'm just imagining that Michael Scott. No. No. Dear God. No. No. It did not work out for Joe Coffey and Lucy Bates or who? Worf and Jadzia Dax.
Who?
I hated being toyed with over the Sawyer Kate Jack trifecta. Mm. And I might add a finale that truly crashed and burned. Just let it be.
Totally with them on the last part. lost all the way, crashed and burned. All right. Well, thanks for responding to our question for next week. Will Katarina and Red face off in the final episode? By the way, we haven't had the animated episode that came out this week too.
Yes.
Explain.
So my understanding is there was some live action footage that was shot. And in order to finish the episode, what they did was they said, let's go. You heard Megan talk about it in her season 4 interview. You can go check that out at theblacklistexposed.com or on the YouTube channel. It feels like it's a comic book show from time to time. You have this crazy cast of characters. You have people with pseudo superpowers. You know, Red has this infinite amount of charisma. Liz has this profiling superpower when she uses it. So they said, well, let's make it a graphic novel. We already have 2 graphic novels as part of the Blacklist lore, right? The Gambler and The Arsonist. You can probably find those still on Amazon. Total shameless plugs all around this week. So they're gonna animate it. We're going to have an animated Blacklist for whatever they did not film and maybe tweak a little bit so it ends up as a pure play season finale rather than leaving it hang like they would have had to if they had not done anything. Like this would have been it. This would have been the season 7 finale super extravaganza. Yeah,
this would have been it. That would have been, I don't think, a strong way to end the season.
No, so, it would have been a sad disappointment if this was the final.
Not that the episode was a disappointment, just that it would have been a sad for a season. This wasn't really, it didn't feel like a season ender.
Yeah, it would have been better to like air the one that where Red passed out and then just air Brothers and call it a day.
True.
And just hold this one and just keep it on the shelf until next year.
I love this because if you follow Megan on Instagram, she's been recording in her shed and back in the back of her house for the last couple of weeks, and that's how they've been doing. Like they've been doing voice work, so they're doing all the voice work. They shipped them microphones and whatnot. They're doing the voice work, and they're getting this animation done, and that's how they're going to finish the season out. Now, I want to say, fans seem really excited about this, which I was happy to see because I love when you take trying times and equal a creative endeavor, and this sounds like it could be really creative. You could get some really cool ideas, and before you start panicking that we're not going to get a real, you could do so much with animation because keep in mind they could have rewritten how episode this 19 was going to go completely, and you might get some backstory, you might get some mythology. This would be a great way to tell a little bit more of the Reddington Katarina story. Because
you don't have to hire an actor for a young Dom. Yep. You don't have to bring a lot of Verbeek back in. Like you can do a whole lot of stuff with animation.
Yes, you can. And the style is it's very cool. It's very sleek. I really dig it. I am a fan. Like Kill Bill did this masterfully. There are a lot of ways they could make this work. And I'm really excited to see what they do.
Yeah, if anybody's seen Fringe, there was an episode where they did a...
Everybody take a shot.
Take a shot.
Take a shot.
Well, you said Lost.
Trey mentions Fringe and
you
Lost.
You said Lost first, so I said Fringe. But
hang on, I think I get my glass.
There was an episode during, I think it was season 3, where they're like an LSD trip. And so because you're on LSD, they're literally in a cartoon world of one of the characters' minds. And so it actually worked out, I don't know if it was well, because the story was a little bit weird, but the concept of the animation was actually really cool. And I loved it.
Yeah, I didn't like that episode, but I like the anime. I think I saw that one, right?
I think you were through 3 last I heard.
Okay, maybe I didn't see that one. I must have seen it on YouTube because I remember seeing the animation.
But there's some really great animated things. You take Avatar The Last Airbender, which then fell down with Avatar The Legend of Korra. Both of those are fantastic series, fantastic shows. Even though you might have think there'd be kid shows, they're not kid shows. There's a good blend of, we'll call it the Pixar magic to them, where the adults can enjoy them too. And then, you know, translate that into Star Wars, Clone Wars, Rebels, or Resistance over on Disney. Those were fantastic animated series. So you can do a lot with animation, and I'm super excited. My biggest fear right now, though, is that Megan, being podcasters, you know, we look for stuff like this, but Megan posted the microphone that they sent them, which was, of course, a condenser microphone. And if you know anything, condenser microphones are really great when you're like in a completely sound treated recording studio. And that's what they use when they like make, you know, recording albums and stuff. But if you're in your shed with no soundproofing, nature, or in the case of Spader's article on the AP, he said he was at the family house and the people keep coming in and bothering him every time he's trying to do this thing. So you have to get all of that background noise out. So that's why when you do podcasting or voiceover work, in a non-treated area, you use dynamic microphones. So I'm curious to see how well the audio turns out at the end of the day.
Are you totally like Monday morning quarterbacking? like how they do. I'm pretty sure that they will be fine.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Sure, but I was like, oh, I used a condenser microphone.
Really? Somebody listening is like, I'm never getting that minute back. I'm never getting that Troy lecture minute back. That's too funny. I'm really excited. I think it's going to be pretty fantastic. And before we move on to the episode, should note that next week on our YouTube channel and our Facebook page, we are going to have a live watch party for the finale. And there might, well, there will be, I believe, special guests.
There should be a special guest.
Yes. A special guest. So fingers crossed. Not fingers crossed. We think there will be a special guest. So you might want to tune in for that and you might find some surprises.
Yeah. I'm super excited. I can't wait. Can't wait.
Okay.
All right. Well, before we lose our faith, let's go ahead and get into this week's case profile.
How do you commit the perfect crime? Well, you hire Warden Roy Coltrane. That's the wrong guy. I'm sorry. My bad. Roy Kane of the Wallens Ridge State Prison to allow his inmates to escape from solitary in order to take out or kidnap high-profile targets in exchange for taking care of the prisoners' families, aided by his right-hand man, Vincent Martin. He's just been hired to take out a woman who's a high-profile witness. And due to a fingerprint from an incarcerated prisoner that Roy has killed, it means the task force is on to him. Oh no! Troy! How are them Duke boys going to get out of this one? What did you think about the overall Blacklister this week?
Man, I was waiting for the van that had all the people in there going to, what was it, Sarah Wims was the person they were going to try to take out. I was waiting for the van to like jump a bridge. It would have been so cool.
Tom Wolpat was Luke Duke in the Dukes of Hazzard, in case you didn't know that. He played the warden.
I thought it's a great concept. I think it's a great idea. I think what fell a little bit short for me this week was there was no real purpose or drive as to why the Blacklister was doing it. I think these, I'll call them standalone episodes that didn't have a lot of mythology in the last couple of weeks, like you go back to like Niall Hatcher, right? He was lonely as a kid growing up and didn't have a family, so he created a family. You know, there's motive in that concept. There wasn't really a motive for him here. All he said was that my pa did it, my grandpapa did it, and so therefore I did it too. And I'm like, that's not a great reason to keep doing it. And he had some off-color remarks in there as well about certain people that can't get above their station in life, which I thought was a little offensive in a way.
I mean, he's a bad guy, so bad guys can say offensive things. That's okay.
So from that angle, it was like...
Is it more offensive than an orange car with a Confederate flag on the top?
I don't know.
You decide.
It flies through the air. That's all that matters.
But yeah. I really like the idea of it. The idea of it is really cool. I like the Blacklist end of the episode. I had some issues with the other stuff, but I mean, we're building, this was very much a setup episode, setting it up for the finale.
Right.
Or the next episode, which now is the finale.
Because we also learned this week that the thought to be dead Matty Tolliver, aka Katarina Stono, for those that aren't keeping score, hired that good old Roy to kidnap Dembe's imam in hopes that she could persuade him to convince Dembe to spill Red's secrets and save Katarina's life. How is that? Is my life worth more than your faith and your prophets? I don't know.
How is that Dembe going to get out of this sticky wicket? Oh, sorry. Now I'm just trying too hard. What did you think about her coming back so soon, this way specifically? Like, I just feel this was ill-advised in a way.
Right, because we're kind of toyed with the fact that she came back in the Ilya episode. Now she's actually back.
And she kind of gave away her one advantage, right? Like, that's her one advantage, and she just gave it away. And I don't know if it was worth it.
And again, this goes to expectations a little bit, because I was hoping that we would see episodes where Liz and her were working together.
Yeah, me too.
A little bit. And then you would have the, oh crap, whatever we did led to something that tipped the hat that she was alive. And that didn't happen.
But to be fair, they were kind of building to that, I'm sure. They had three more episodes that we'll never see. So it could have very easily been building to that.
Could have been. Too. Could have been.
Yeah.
Although I think this one was polished and done for the most part, because this was 717 originally, which means it was filmed as the 150th episode. So if you go back with all the 150th promotional details, that's when we found out about season 8 and look at the dates on that. Like, COVID, I don't think, was really a big concern at that point.
No, I mean, in terms of, there were three more episodes. So 19 would have been more of them working together, and then 20, and then 21, and then 22. It all came to a head. You know what I mean?
It could.
So we don't have that fleshed out arc that we might have had otherwise.
I mean, yeah, they haven't done anything with the fact that Liz knows that Red isn't Ilya, you know, for a couple weeks.
And they acknowledge that everybody knows it, but nobody's really talking about it. So they're talking about other stuff.
Instead, I'm just like, I'll just give you the keys of the kingdom. Here's all my money. I don't care that you're a complete asshole and completely screwing me over and doing things I don't tell you to do, but sure, here's billions of dollars. No problem.
We'll come back to that. Just settle down. Settle down, Beavis. Red will get there just in the nick of time like he always does again. And by the end, Red gives a speech on how prisoners are treated poorly and light bulb moments. Roy inherited this from his daddy and granddaddy. We learned that. We also learned that Maddie Tolliver hired him right before Red kills him and dropped the Iron off at the exact same spot they're at right now with Dembe. I hope you weren't hoping any for any secrets, Troy, because this brings me to number 200 on the blacklist, the Coincidence Eater.
Nom, 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 nom.
That part is like the part of the episode that drove me bonkers. I'm just like, so she had the Iron dropped off at this location and they're still using that same location. They didn't move to a different place, well, to COVID, a more secure location.
They were under shelter in place orders.
I don't know. I swallow a lot of things in many TV shows. That one was just my eyes.
You're a master,
my eyes hurt.
So number one, you're a master criminal, a ghost in the wind, because you're supposedly Katerina Rostova. And supposedly dead. And you're going to be in the same location where you had the body dropped off initially?
Yep. Like, where at least 5 or 6 different people would know where that location was. It just feels risky to me. Just feels risky. That's all. Maybe, you know, being dead and all makes you slip.
I mean, last week it was buying all your stuff to, you know, disintegrate bodies and hide your tracks at the same grocery store. You know, maybe we got to be more consultants on the blacklist of like, you know, if you really want to murder somebody or kidnap somebody, here's how you do it. And Aaron will tell you all about it.
Man, I watch and listen to so much true crime. I probably could. Of course, now this is going to be evidence in my trial, and that's not good. All right. Red, meanwhile, is recovering from his health scare while Wrestler dishes on Red's condition to Liz. I'm still mad he never opened that file.
I am too.
Why wouldn't you open it? I give him respect, but still. Turns out that all that lying and backstabbing and bad stuff Liz has done to Red, he still wants to give her the keys to the Reddington Kingdom, and he needs his attorney, Marvin Gerard, to drop the papers, which are going to come back to Marvin. Turns out Marvin just got released from Wallens recently, which worked out great for this week's case. Now,
coincidence.
Let's go into characters, and we're going to come back to the whole leaving the keys of the kingdom to Liz as we get into characters.
Sounds good. All right, music first. During the break in to take out Sarah Wims, we hear, I think it sounded like Canned Heat's On the Road Again, but it was like mixed with like a beat to it. So I don't know if there was a separate artist that actually put this together.
On the Road Again.
But the harmonica is so distinct that if it was Canned Heat's On the Road Again, it wasn't actually Canned Heat's On the Road Again. So if someone has any insight on that, let me know. But that's what it sounded like to me. And as Red questions Warden Kane, we hear Trent Moeller's remix of The Answer by Uncle featuring Big in Japan. So that 10 times fast. And then to close out the episode, as Katerina and Liz are reunited, we hear Light by returning artist Michael Kiwanuka. And you can hear all of that on the playlist over on Spotify and at Apple Music. You can get links to both of those playlists on the website at theblacklistexposed.com.
All right, let's go into our characters. Wrestler tells Liz about Red's medical file. And that's really all he does this week. I guess he was tired. He just got back from Detroit.
Well, I mean, and it didn't look like it was a phone book, if I remember, or maybe it's like a suburb of Detroit phone book. Maybe it's not the Detroit proper phone book.
Yeah, I'm thinking it must have been a small town.
Yeah.
Very, very small town on the outskirts of Detroit, because it didn't look that thick.
It did not look that thick. No.
Yeah.
It was in a file organizer, if I remember right, on those stand-up stands.
But anyways. You know, memory is all up to the eye of the beholder, I guess. Cooper and Amar don't do much at all, really. Couple lines here and there.
He did so little that his name was Aram, but you know.
What did I say, Amar? Ah! Look at that. Couldn't remember his name. Cooper and Aram did very little, and Park didn't do anything either. So you've got three characters that really didn't do anything for the last 3 weeks. Or 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't count Brothers, though. I mean, Brothers was a kind of standalone bottle episode for Wrestler, but.
You know what? I'll count what I want. How about that?
Sure.
It's my math. That's how the internet works these days.
I know how you can kill people and hide bodies, so I'm not going to argue with you. Go right ahead.
Marvin Gerard returns.
I love Fisher Stevens. I do.
I do too. I love Fisher Stevens. I almost made a bad joke about the 80s, but I'm not going to do it. Okay.
Was it a movie that starts with S and C in the title?
No, it wasn't about a movie. It was about bad life choices that he made. Oh. Does not like to look in the back. He's trying to get his license back in the Ethics Council, have his nuts in a Cheerio. Because apparently this Paul Wynn is the guy that determines if Marvin will get his license back. And to do so, apparently Al Roker, who is Wynn's biggest client, is also good friends with Red Reddington, and Red leverages that for Marvin's good favor. You're not an Al Roker fan.
I am not. This is, we talked about this on our other podcast where they have, we call it breaking the fourth wall. Like, Al Roker is Al Roker. I have this problem with Suicide Squad. Will Smith is Will Smith. You don't see Will Smith as Deadshot. You don't see Will Smith as the genie in Aladdin. Even though he plays it really well, you cannot not see Will Smith. You don't see the character. So in this case,
I disagree on Will Smith, but we'll continue.
Well, there's certain roles where he was really good. But
In Aladdin, he was great. And
I said he did a good job in Aladdin. I'm just saying you don't see the genie. You see Will Smith playing the genie. In this case, you see Al Roker playing the character of Al, Ray's friend, who happens to be the Paul Wynn's client. And
I mean, he was being Al Roker, not just Al, right? He was playing Al Roker.
That's what I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if he was supposed to be Al Roker or if he's supposed to be...
He made a joke about his guaranteed contract. So yeah, I 100% believe he's playing Al Roker. And not to mention, Red makes the neck of the woods joke, which is something Al Roker says every morning. I know that because it's background noise. I hear that every morning.
Oh, see, I don't watch the show.
And now we'll see what's happening in your neck of the woods.
So yeah, it's that kind of stuff where it's like, to some people, it might be funny. Yes, it's a great... I know Al's a big fan of the show. You know, kudos to Al for being in there. You know, we are not saying that we want to be in the show or anything. It has nothing to do with that. It just has... It takes the audience...
Why'd you even throw that in there then?
Because, you know...
Felt like a subtle pitch, but whatever.
But I mean, my name was in the show. Your name was in the show.
My name's not been in the show.
You were the cousin that got all the money. Troy Peterson or whatever his name was.
I think that... Peterson's a pretty common name, man. I mean, that I don't think that was me. I think that was just a very nice thing.
The point is that when you have someone that's this famous and this recognizable, it tears down the fourth wall from the audience and it rips you out of the show. It's like, oh my God, it's Al Roker. And now it doesn't feel like The Blacklist. It looks like James Spader and Al Roker talking to each other. And it didn't do anything for the story for me. And the scene went on really long, to be quite honest. Like, that's a place where you could have had Red having he has a little bit of a fun story about Marvin Gerard's behavior and his personality and all that stuff, but that could have been like a really great Red's rhetoric type thing, a nice Red story about Marvin Gerard and the story that, you know, this one time with Marvin Gerard, you know, we went to this play or this, you know, countryside thing or whatever. I don't know, the whole scene did not work for me at all. There was no
hint.
There's no backstory about why Paul Wynn and Marvin Gerard hate each other, other than Paul Wynn's just a SOB.
Well, yeah. Kind of. I mean, I would disagree. Like, that seemed to bother me really much. I mean, I feel like I see him every day now. I do see him every day now.
You do see him every
day.
I'm
trapped at home. That's my background noise. It's today's show. I like Al Roker. I think he seems like a very nice man. And Marvin Gerard is because he's duplicitous. That's why. Paul Wynn was part of the ethics committee, and Marvin Gerard just does not have any ethics. And he knows that. He knows he's deeply associated with Red Reddington. He sees Red... And he recognizes him on site, and he knows that's bad news, and he knows he was in the right by not recommending him.
Yeah, that's part of the issue. I couldn't tell that he recognized Ray or if he recognized Marvin. But does he know
Marvin's associated? I saw Marvin Gerard. Maybe he recognized him. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Because he's taken aback, and he's like, what is this? What's going on?
I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, it's a fun scene. Totally get it. It moved the story along. But at the same time, do we need it? I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, when you're referencing what we were talking about in our other show, what we were saying is, when does a celebrity cameo take you out of the show?
Correct.
Like, it's too in your nose or in your face, and it just feels like it's taking you out of the moment because it's a distraction more than it is uninhibited. And in your opinion, because for whatever reason, it took you out of it. So it took you out of the complete moment. Whereas if you would have had any other actor play that particular role, it wouldn't have taken you out of it, and you could have just been absorbed into the scene. That's what you're saying, right? Because totally. Al Roker's such a personality, whether you like him or don't like him, he's such a personality and he's so well known. And also as this really super nice guy. So I do say it was kind of hard to see him as somebody who would play this card, because you just know Al Roker wouldn't do that. He just seems like a good guy. That takes you out of it a little bit too.
You clearly haven't seen the morning show yet.
What's that?
Said you haven't seen the morning show yet.
No, I know. I guess not. It's so he does well. I thought he did fine.
Yeah.
I wasn't distracted at all. I liked his moments. I actually thought, you know, for Weatherman, he did a pretty good role. He acted quite well.
I thought the charisma between him and Reddington seemed like they were like really good friends. Like he should know way more about Reddington than even the audience knows at this point. Finishing each other's sentences and all that jabbing back and forth. Like I didn't see anybody that was that what do you want to call it? That connected to Red. Like not even like Madeline Pratt or even what's her name from earlier this season.
I don't agree. I mean, he's like this with everybody he meets. Like, we should get together. We can have a few laughs later on. Da, da, da. That just feels like that's who Red is when he meets someone that's going to benefit him.
But back to Marvin Gerard, because he's the real character in the show.
Yeah. Fisher Stevens. And yeah.
Can we talk about
Michelle Pfeiffer doing?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I love the toy store scene. Don't get me wrong. I thought it was great. But this is one of those characters where it's like, you had things in the episode that you go, why did we need that when we could have done so much more? Like Marvin Gerard was in Wallens, right? So why don't we write the story around some kind of like Andy Dufresne kind of angle where he's actually helping Roy Kane and he's the one that actually gives Red the tips from inside the prison and that's how he secures his release. And then you can do the Al Roker scene because he gets his license back towards the end of the episode. I thought that Marvin was kind of wasted a little bit in this episode for the caliber of acting Fisher Stevens has.
I don't know, my opinion.
I
like his angle. I like bitchy Fisher Stevens. I think it worked great. And especially he was in the toy store. He's telling that woman, did you see it on the shelf? Then no, we ain't got it in the bag. I like that because I just think he plays that stuff well.
But I think right in the exposition where he's just telling Cooper what all happens though. It's like, I'm a big fan. Show me, don't tell me. That's my personal preference.
I understand. I enjoyed Marvin. I'm glad he was back, and I liked the way that they played it because it was different than what I would have expected. So
I do like Megan. Like, is that Marvin Gerard? I was waiting for Wrestler to be like, what is that punk ass doing here?
Well, Katarina returns with a vengeance. She has a convo with the Imam and basically about faith and prophets and loyalty, and then comes to believe Dembe will reveal all to save him. I loved her delivery of, why don't you pray on that? I just thought that was a great moment.
Absolutely.
And we kind of talked about this, but she gives it the advantage very easily in terms of my fake death.
Why would you tip your hat to Red so early? I don't get it.
I don't know. But Dembe made the right choice, according to Katarina. He was going to tell all. He was ready to get videotaped and everything else. And then tells... He escapes because Red gets there at the right time. And that was the thing I talked about earlier, which did bother me because I'm getting tired of that move where somebody's getting ready to confess Saul and then they're saved at the last minute or they're killed at the last minute or they disappear at the last minute or the microphone dies or the camera shuts down or whatever it is. Spit it out. If you're going to get close to giving secrets away, spit it out. I just don't want to see that anymore.
At least Dembe didn't tell Katarina that he loved him. Loved her.
I would have been happier if Dembe would have been like, she's my daughter. I would have been like, that's a cool play on it. That's so funny. Yeah, that part, that was just a repeat frustrations from, I just don't want that gimmick used again.
Yeah. At this point in this late in the season, you have to start unveiling a nugget of something. You don't have to give the whole thing away. Just a nugget that'll set up the next episode. And this nugget is, okay, we're back to Red and Dembe on opposite sides, but then he has a conversation with the Imam in the car. And now maybe he's more open to Dembe did what he did because he had to do it. And he's not going to shoot Dembe in the face now like he did to Kaplan.
I certainly hope not. Well, we get to Katarina at the end. She's sitting in the car with Liz and she tells Liz she hopes Liz makes the right choice again. And you know, Liz is like, didn't I already make the right choice? What are you talking about? And yeah. She's like, no, well, you know.
What do you say, Mom? You going to kill me if I make the wrong one?
Just saying. I mean, it's still in your hands, which will probably feed a lot of people who are on the fake arena train, meaning that she's not the real Katarina. She's a fake Katarina.
The fact that she's still in the same place where she had the body delivered, that she's now questioning Dembe, tells me that she's not the super spy. If that isn't a clue that this isn't Katarina Rostova, I don't know what is.
I'll be honest, that's the first thing I thought of. I'm like, that is not Katarina Rostova. She's going to have him delivered to the same? Nope, not the same lady. That is not the same lady. It says the outcome's in her hands. Liz doesn't really do a whole lot this episode. She says, we find out that she's going to a very dark place and her path is undeniable. So we've got that.
Can we talk about the FBI, put your hands up from the rooftop over?
Because I don't want to be poo-poo. I feel like you poo-pooed the episode enough on the whole Marvin Gerard thing. I don't want to bring up how poorly planned that was on Liz's part. What was your plan? What exactly was the plan from across the roof?
If you're going to do
say,
that,
stay you gotta, there, I'll be right over.
You got to at least shoot him in the shoulder.
Didn't even, like, what was your plan? I'm going to hop this thing? I don't know. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It is a comic book. Maybe she has superpowers and she can fly over 12-foot gaps. I don't know.
You could do that in the comic. We could have that next week and I'd buy it because, it's a comic book. It's all true. Gosh. Spider-Man's real.
Sorry, I thought it was funny. I was like, FBI.
No, I was quick, watching guys, that run. Going.
She's going to get
us. What is your plan? That's what I yelled at the TV. What is your plan?
the park's like, next door. And then she gets clocked in the face.
Yeah. Like, all right. Well, Dembe contemplates. I mean, I guess she could have held them there and then Park could have ran up and got them. Maybe. I just don't know why you would go that route, but whatever.
You just duck and lay down and then she can't shoot you.
True. We just crawl out of there.
Yeah.
Die Hard style. Dembe contemplates his decision and Imam forgives him, tells him it is not his fault. He agrees to reveal the secret Katarina needs and be videotaped only to be saved at the last minute.
You keep bringing that up. But does that bother you at all?
Yeah, it does. Really bothers me. Really. That one thing really bothers me. But the Dembe finally saying, I'm going to tell you the truth. I like that. That was a cool turn. Because I expected him to hold out and be willing to risk the Imam's life.
Yeah, I think that what I loved about this episode the most is the relationship between Dembe, the Imam, and even the Imam with Red at the end of the episode when they're sitting in the car. I think there's a lot of things that you talk about. I think there's a couple things going on here. Number one, just to kind of summarize the episode again, there's the warden. So the warden is doing this because it's the family business. There's a tie-in to the show. The warden is taking care of the criminals' families, even though he doesn't have to. So that plays into maybe Red isn't related to Liz at all, but still taking care of her. And then you have this philosophical conversation with the Imam, and the Imam is saying things like, the actions don't necessarily outweigh the faith or the trust of the person. So you have to look at the person as a whole, not look at the person as their immediate actions and consequences. Which is why I think that ties into the fact that Red's willing to give the estate to Liz still, even though her actions are what they are. And then also why Red doesn't shoot Dembe in the face, because he understands that the wholeness of their relationship is more important than the immediacy of what's happening right in the moment. And that's true. I think that's the thing that we could take away as ourselves, right? Someone who does a snap thing, it's like, oh, that's not really what they are all the time. We talk about it with people that put crappy shit on Twitter all the time and, and they're like, oh, I'm going to get fired for that. And it's like, no, they had a lapse in judgment. Don't be a dumbass. Don't do it again. Move along.
There's same people that will say mean things when people get cast in shows. So,
yeah,
what are you going to do? Things happen. People say mean stuff. A lot of times passions get high. That's not what they would normally say.
I think that's what the Imam was trying to portray.
Yeah, it was. I really, really enjoyed that turn because I didn't think Dembe would do that. And I'm glad by the end it feels like Red's not really holding him at fault anymore. It feels like he's letting it go. Because if we had a whole another, we already had that, we already did this dance. So I'm glad that they made that a point.
Oh, that's if Red even remembers that they did the dance. Because, man, he's all foggy at the end of the episode again. And I'm like, what's going on with Red? He's like, is he there? Is he not there?
He definitely loses some train of thought there. So Red has a checkup. We find out from two episodes ago when he passed out that he's definitely got some physical ailments, though he's not yet saying what they are. But it's enough to make him question his mortality. So Red has a checkup. He blames it on dehydration.
From the wine.
We know he's... What's that?
From the wine. From the wine, right. From the Wagyu.
Hey, it'll happen, right? You drink enough of it. I've been there, right? We've all been there. Stay at home. Drink, drink. We know he's sick, but not with what? Like I said. And while he's contemplating this mortality, while he's eating vichyssoise, which is a weird soup, he is saying that he's prepared to give Liz his entire criminal empire. And I kind of want to know why you think that is. Because there's one point that I thought was interesting, which is when Marvin's talking to him, Marvin says, you're giving the cop the kings to the kingdom. And Red says, regrettably. So why? And why is that regrettably?
Well, regrettably, I think, was because of all the times that Liz has betrayed him or done things that he specifically has told her not to do. So I think that's what the regrettably was about. I don't think it was deeper than that, personally.
Okay. Well, how do you feel about this, giving her it's the criminal weird. Empire instead of somebody who wants it?
Because she's a cop, and this is all criminal activity. It's one thing if you're saying, I'm giving you the empire, versus another thing of, I'm closing the business and cashing out. Here's the cash. Right, I'll be like, thanks, Dad. I'll take the cash. Or thanks, Mom. I'll take the cash. Or thanks, whoever you are, creepy uncle. I'll take the cash. But to actually run the empire, run the business, that seems weird. Because she is a cop. She's an FBI agent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe there's something more to it. Like, again, it goes back to the, I keep hearing the, we're asking the wrong questions. And I'm just like, is there something bigger about his empire now that we have to be thinking about? And it's not about this relationship at all, but it's about passing the torch to the empire. Because the empire has some connection to Liz. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, here's one thing. You know, I know a lot of people have whatever the theory has. He's a father figure. Your wacky theories, whatever they are. You know, some people allude to he thinks of her as his child, whatever. Why would he do that? I would say if he really thought of her as a child, as his child, he would just leave the money. Because the money would, he would just want to take care of her. This is saying, here are the keys to the business. You maintain the business. You keep putting your life at risk for that money. That just seems like a different kind of gift.
It seems like a non-familial gift. Like, hey, by the way, it's $1 billion and you could get shot every day, but all yours. Like for someone that was really sad about her death, doesn't seem like he's so sad about her death now. Like if you're going to be putting mortal danger every day.
But then again, that happens in, you know, mob families all the time. You hand it to your kids. So I guess depends on how you look at it, I suppose. Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the end of this episode and not much else happens. I will say, like we said at the beginning, this really felt like a setup episode. A lot of this was setting up for what's to come. And we're going to get that finale, which, to my understanding, has been completely reworked. So just because it was originally going to be the 719, it's been reworked to be the finale. So I think a lot of that art, that animation is going to actually give you some details you probably wouldn't have got it in until 22.
Yeah. 7-9-T-22.
Right. 7-1-2-2. Ah, man. So what do you think going into the season finale? How you feeling?
The things that I definitely want resolved before the end of the season. I don't necessarily need to know who Red is. Well,
hang on. Is that fair though? Because I mean, they weren't able to finish three episodes. I mean,
but they had to rework the story. They could have accelerated it, you know?
Okay. What are you hoping? I'm sorry.
I just want to know if it's Katerina or not. Just please tell me if it's Katerina or not. For real. I can't go all summer in the groups.
I got a feeling you're going to go all summer.
I have a feeling I am too.
I really do.
Yeah. I know that we'll get an answer of who Red is eventually. Cause they said, if we know who Red is, it ends the show, but like, just tell me if it's Katerina or not. Oh my gosh.
Are you tired of that game?
I'm kind of tired of the anybody could be anybody game. Yeah. A little bit.
You just want to know characters.
Because, I don't know, there's part of, it's weird. Part of the fandom is like, I totally thought Red was Ilya. And there's the other part of fandom that was like, if you thought Ilya was Red, you are missing something completely in the show. And it's that constant battle that the fandom ends up having, which I know the writers love to toy with, and that's why they keep doing it to us.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, man, like, just give an answer.
I feel like we say this every year.
It's seven years in at this point. Just give an answer.
here's what
there's cool stories you can tell even if you give us the answer.
Here's what I'll say, because we say this every year and it's not changing. They're not telling us the big one. But I do agree. I'd like to know the Katarina thing. Is she or isn't she? Like, put that to bed so we know. Even if she's going to stay on the show for a while, I want people to stop fighting it, you know?
Right.
But on the same token, Troy, I mean, to be fair, they have flat out cleared the path and said he is not the real Raymond Reddington. He is not Liz's father. Those two things have been cementally
concretely
agreed upon by the showrunners in the show and outside of the show, yet people still debate it. So I don't know what you could say a ton of things and people are still going to debate it.
It's true. It's very true.
I mean, unless there's actually a stop and a monologue about how I am Katarina and here's where I was born and here's where, you know, I used to hang out with Diesel back in the day and, you know, or whatever. It just, all those, unless you have it point blank or somebody's even talking to the camera saying, guys, I am Katarina Rostova. And even then, I think people will still debate it.
But when we come back for the first episode of season 8, Liz can just give the full rundown in the war room like she did this year. All right, let me catch you up to speed. Okay.
Here's all the secrets I got since last year. Da, 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 da. I forgot about that. That was pretty funny. Can you keep a secret? No. Mm-mm. Nope.
Nope.
Can't do it.
Oh, by the way,
can't do it.
Oh, by the way, hey, Park, you're new. Let me catch you up to speed, too.
But I do kind of want Keenler to happen. I'm on that side. I'm on that side of the fence. Not until the end, though. I'm with you.
Not until the end.
Not until the end.
Yep. Until the end. They help each other out, whatever it is.
Can I tell you a secret?
Sure.
It's not really a secret. I rewatched Brothers again.
It's good. It's really, really like, good.
That's three times. Usually after the second, you know, when we watch something twice, I forgot. Oh, my God. How did I forget this? I did not own up to my wrongness last week.
Oh, that's right.
So here, last week I said two things that were not correct. And one was that it wasn't actually Tommy Markin that shot Wrestler's dad. It was the perp, and Tommy Markin just let him die and instead said, you should have taken the money. So it implied that they were working together. Plus the guy's like, I got him. And then it was $50,000 that he borrowed, and with interest, it was up to $150,000. Those two things did happen, and I missed them. Because last week, I only got to watch it once. Normally, I watch it twice. Once, and I take notes for everything, and the second time to make sure I didn't miss something the first time. So I missed those two things because I didn't get my second view like I normally do. Now, that said, I also would like to do this in the manner of Troy Heinrichs, like to pay due respect to you, who never admits he's wrong. So I'm going to say, yeah, Tommy Markin didn't shoot him, but he let the other guy shoot him. And that's just like shooting him. So really, I'm not wrong there. And two, but it was 50,000. I mean, yeah, the interest thing and it went up to 150,000, but it started with 50,000. And that's what I said too. So really, I'm right on that too.
Oh, there you go. So good. Spot on. Oscar for Aaron.
But yeah, I rewatched that and I had a great time. Third time. I still really like that episode. I want Anthony Michael. I'll come back so bad. I just like him so much.
I like the kid actors were great too.
They were. Yeah. They did a great job. They did a great job. All right, everybody. Make sure to tune in for our wrap party or watch party when we're going to watch the episode with you guys. And in between, during commercial breaks, we'll pop in and we'll talk to you. And before and after the show, and there will be a special guest. But first, we want to take a quick second to say thank you to those of you that are supporting the show by going to Patreon. That's Patreon. That's patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Special big thanks to our honorary blacklist, Patricia. Also, special shout out to our task force members, Lacey, Marilyn, Judy, and Sharon. All of these people receive really cool gifts from us. And you could get a cool gift as well for donating at the $20 level or higher. And you want a cool t-shirt or coffee mug? You know you do. Well, you don't have to stay at that $20 level forever. Just a few months to get the cool gifts.
And if $20 is too steep, our $5 level gets you early access to all the special episodes and interviews before anyone else. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Click the dollar sign in your podcast app or the link in the show notes and fill the fedora to get some awesome rewards for yourself. Stay tuned. More show coming up right after this.
You obviously love podcasts, but are you also a fan of movies and television? Do you want to listen to a show that reviews entertainment honestly and casts pretentiousness to the wind? That debates both film and TV topics in a fun, good-spirited way while still getting to the heart of why we all love them so much? Then don't miss the award-winning weekly podcast, The Hollywood Outsider, now available on your favorite podcast app or at TheHollywoodOutsider.com.
Hey, Dembe Loyals, this is Hisham Taufik. You are listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we feature two of Red's scenes from this week, and then you get to vote which is your favorite over on the website. Just look for the post for Roy Kane over at TheBlacklistExposed.com. Our first clip comes when Red informs the Ethics Council about Gerard's character.
Mr. Wynn, say what you will about Marvin Gerard, and God knows there's a lot to say, but the man has suffered a great deal of hardship in his life, and through it all, he has remained resolute in his advocacy for and dedication to his clients. His principles and sense of justice have always remained intact. Now, his personality, his demeanor, that's another subject entirely.
That being said, Paul, you're the disciplinary counsel. You run the ethics committee. So let me pose an ethical question. Is it so wrong to reinstate a man with a questionable character in exchange for, say, keeping a client with an unquestionable one?
You wouldn't leave me.
Reinstate him, or I'll walk and take my guaranteed contract with me.
You wouldn't.
Oh, dear.
Listen, for what it's worth, I once lost a bundle to Al, thinking he was bluffing during a hand of seven-card stud. He has the sweetest, most childlike face, but my guy Al is as serious as a heart attack. But please, don't take my word for it. Talk it over with your client. See what's happening in his neck of the woods. I understand the committee is meeting this afternoon.
Our second clip comes when Red dishes about the properties of grapefruit.
My doctor told me to stay away from grapefruit juice.
Who are you?
He said something about statins and how grapefruit affects the metabolic this or that. I don't know. But whatever the risk, Ruby Red is worth it. Please sit. My name is Raymond Reddington. And as a general rule, innovative is not a word I would use to describe a prison warden. The indignities that the men in your charge are subjected to are cruel and often inhumane. But you found a way to monetize that cruelty. I imagine your clients pay top dollar for you to commit the perfect crime on their behalf. Street crimes using men who are off the street. I'm curious how you landed on the idea. The light bulb moment. I love hearing about light bulb moments. Do tell. That's an order, not a request.
Which was your favorite? If you enjoy some seven-card stud, vote hashtag Red Bluff. Or if you love that delicious ocean spray, Ruby Red, vote hashtag Red Juice.
Hashtag Red Juice. That just feels wrong. All right, let's go to Special Agent Intel. First, some gratitude. Sophie, on last week's episode, that was such a fascinating episode. Kudos to Diego and Anthony Michael Hall in their acting, and Megan. All of them knocked it out of the ballpark. I think the casting choices for the child actors were deliberate because young Robbie was on the path to becoming modern-day wrestler, and young wrestler was definitely not on that path, so he looked completely different. Agreed. I hope wrestler and Liz get together in the final season. Wrestler has always been kind of in love with her. He has blown off dates with both Audrey and the girl from Alter Ego for Liz, and now Liz basically said that she can't live without him. More wrestler and Liz scenes, please.
Agree. Judy wrote in, one of our patrons, and said, hey, never know where best to talk to you guys. Been using Twitter lately, but this might be better. A little lengthy, but bear with me. I've been thinking of the ending of the last episode and why the powers that be took the route they did. One answer is that they wanted to reveal Liz's feelings for Wrestler. From what I heard, she views him as an important friend. What does Wrestler feel? He didn't reveal much. So it could mean something for the future of their relationship, but it also just as well may be as far as they go, just as you two have commented. But there was another part of the ending that I also thought could be telling. Why did Wrestler call Liz for help and not Red? And why was Liz able to save Wrestler by removing the evidence? I'm asking this from the dramatic point of view. Why did the show choose to go that route rather than have Wrestler call Red for help? Had he done that, he would have had Red appear in the show. So this approach was a change for the show. They even made it so that Red and Liz together help Wrestler, and they still could have included the last scene between Liz and Wrestler. So why did they exclude Red altogether? We need to also remember this episode was supposed to appear next week, this week, and not last week. I think the reason will become more clear after we see this week's episode, but I have to guess, I think foundationally, the show wants to display that Liz has some of Red's powers, and they've done this before in Ruin, and the episode where he disposed of a body a la the Stewmaker, where she disposed of the body a la the Stewmaker. So the original order of the two episodes is supposed to be first one where Red contemplates at least who his successor should be. The next episode, Wrestler contacts Liz, not Red, and she saves Wrestler. It's setting up Liz as Red's successor, or at least wanted to give us that appearance, I think. And as said, more may be revealed about why this coming Friday. Anyway, I think this may be why Red did not appear last week. As always, enjoyed the podcast. Judy, aka Timeless Flight on Twitter, at Miller22775.
Boy, she nailed that one, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that works.
It's a great concept about how if Brothers would have aired after this one, he wants to give the thing to her, and then you see her actually do the hiding of the body and saving Wrestler's life. There's like, well, maybe she wants to go down the criminal path. I don't know.
It works. Yeah. It really does work.
It does.
Maybe that's why he sees in her what she could become.
Scary. The warrior gene. The poor guy in that tracksuit running alongside the car.
I still want him to hook up, though. Go ahead.
Yeah. Why not?
60-40. They want to go to town. So...
is what it is. Saying. We'll see what happens. Finale next week. I can't believe it's here.
Man, it's been crazy. I mean, even though we technically we didn't, we got three less episodes, we're still, it feels like
ending the same about amount. The same time. Yeah.
Right. We're ending the same time. So odd. All right. Well, that's going to conclude this episode. Six seasons are on Netflix, and now's the time to recommend The Blacklist to your friend, your enemy, your frenemy, your neighbor, or your significant other who you don't have a relationship with yet, but you might by the end of this series. And subscribe to the Blacklist Exposed podcast when you do. All the case profiles can be found at theblacklistexposed.com and everywhere great podcasts can be found.
For more great Aaron and Troy hijinks, follow us on your favorite social media outlet. I'm at Troy Heinrichs. He's at Aaron Smirks. Together we are at the Blacklist GSM. Talk about the show, the podcast, or, you know, just whatever you want to talk about, because we only got 1 week left, and man, tell us what your favorite animated series is. What animated series do you watch? I think that'd be fun. I'd like to know what should be our watch list for after this is over.
And yeah, big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. Will Katarina and Red face off next week? And maybe will it be in animated form? Like, who's Tom? Who's Jerry? I want to know.
Hey, at least this time he'll be upright and walking and not strapped to a fence or paralyzed. So it'll be a fair fight.
Well, and they could do some cool karate because they're doing an animated form. They could do hi-ya.
They could. It's going to be great. I can't wait. I'm excited.
And I want some Last Dragon glow in the background for every character.
That'd be cool.
Who's the master?
Do you want the pow, bam, wham intercuts? Batman
Why not?
Style?
Why not? Why not? We got to get out of here. This is just not making any sense. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. See ya. Don't forget, watch party. Be there. YouTube.
Or Facebook.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
But before we end this show, we've got to get to Roy's rhetoric. We've got to get to Red's rhetoric.